Wednesday, January 19th, 2011, episode number 2 of the Brewers Theater Podcast, featuring Dakota Schmidt and Abraham Jaroszewski. On this episode, we're going to have Larry Granillo from HardballTimes.com. And everybody, go pack on Sunday. And remember, this podcast is not affiliated with the MLB and the Milwaukee Brewers. We're just a bunch of Brewer fans talking about the Brewers. Don't mistake in yourself. Just listen to the show, enjoy, and see you guys next week. Goodbye. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 2 of the Brewers Fear Podcast. Of course, I'm Dakota Schmidt, and alongside me this week is Abraham Jaroszewski. Abe, how are you doing this week, buddy?
Pretty good, pretty good. Can't complain.
Yeah, most definitely, and we are both, by the time you're listening to the show, we are both, I think, 34 days until pitchers and catchers actually our reports of, it's coming, guys, it's coming, just keep on waiting, just keep on waiting. You know, after Super Bowl, after the Packers win the Super Bowl, boom, it's baseball season, so yes, no, what's all about. So, on tonight's show, we're going to have an interview with Larry Granillo from HardballTimes.com. He's going to give his opinion on the Brewers offseason. The Matt Garza trade, which will me and Abe will talk about, you know, later on in this episode. And me and Larry basically talk about some other baseball stuff other than that. And that's basically it, guys, for this episode, other than me and Abe talk about the latest Brewers news. But next week's show will be a big show, and we'll tell you the guests we're going to have on next week's show at the end of this week's show. So everybody, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it's Larry Granillo time. So everybody, we'll be right back.
Make way for the prince.
Heir to the throne, heir to the throne.
Yeah.
Heir to the throne, heir to the throne.
Get him.
Man, when the presence of royalty, you would
get him.
Man, when the presence of royalty, boy.
Yeah.
Heir to the throne, heir to the throne.
Mr. Prince Fielder.
Yeah,
baby.
Man, when the presence of royalty, you would
get him.
Man, when the presence of royalty, boy.
He ain't scared to your bones yet. Look who's on deck. Heir to the throne, yeah, prince is up next.
Uh-oh.
You've got a couple screws messing up in your toolbox. If you think that you'll stop this man from hitting moonshots, spaceman's walking the plate, man.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Brewers Theater Podcast. I'm here joined by Larry Granillo from HardballTimes.com. So, Larry, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Dakota. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, and, you know, in last week's show, we the guys on the show, they talk about the you know, Brewers offseason interview, but I kind of like you know, an expert's opinion on the offseason for Brewers. Of course, in my eyes, the rotation kind of went from like worst to first. I know that we don't have the best rotation in baseball, not the best rotation in the NL, probably not even, you know, likely the best rotation in our own division. Of course, Cardinals and Reds could have a better rotation. I don't know. We could talk about the Cubs, but what did they really have other than, you know, Garza, maybe Zambrano, I don't know. But what do you think about the Brewers offseason getting Greinke, Markham, Saito? What do you think about it?
I think you really can't ask for much more as a Brewers fan. I think every single Brewers fan the last 2 years going into the season we're looking at that offense and feeling, all right, feeling pretty good. We had a principal, we got Ryan Braun providing the offense. You can hang with that. But then they looked at that rotation, and everyone had to think. I know I thought, whew, this is not good. As long as hopefully at least a little bit will go right with the rotation and we'll be able to compete. But as you know, that did not happen the last 2 years. Everything that could possibly go wrong went wrong with that rotation. Mm-hmm. And so it killed the season. But now, all of a sudden, in the span of, 2 hours, that Saturday night, when all of a sudden we found out that Zach Greinke was getting traded to the Brewers, every single one of those feelings just disappeared, flew out the window, and now everyone's thinking, we have this offense. Offense is still great. We didn't trade any of our offense to get Greinke. And now we have Zach Greinke and Nils Lenigardo at the top of the rotation and Sean Markham. We had a great offense and crappy pitching. Now we have a great offense and great pitching. This is great. This is a godsend for the Brewers. So, as a Brewers fan, yeah, you got to be feeling really good about what they did this
Most definitely. And I think the one player that can really help out of this is Randy Wolf. Because last year he was the number two, and now he goes down to the number four, and he has less pressure on him.
Well, yeah, definitely. He's an above average pitcher for the number four slot, whereas before you had him as a below average, much below average pitcher for the number two spot. It totally changes how the rotation goes, how people are throwing on the field when their guys take the hill, and it changes the way that the bullpen's going to be used too, because now all of a sudden you have Gallardo and Greinke taking those innings at the beginning, and you don't have to bring in the bullpen an inning or two too early, 3 days in a row, and everything kind of just falls into the right spot with the trades for Markham and Greinke, and just makes the team much better.
Yeah, most definitely. And when the Brewers signed Saito, people were talking about how, he's a good reliever, and 1 year we only signed him for about $2 to $3 million, but he can't pitch consecutive days. That's the main problem with him. But with this new rotation, you don't have to, have a set of man or whatever, every single day. If you need a set of man, you can easily put in the young kid in Zach Braddock, who, had a nice first season last year with the Brewers.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes everything better, because, like I said, instead of having 4 or 5 days in a row of your bullpen getting used, they only get used 2 or 3 days in a row. So each person, every time they use, is just that much better, and they're in that much more of a optimal position for them, and it really helps your game and helps your season in the long run.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And let's actually talk about the two major holes in the Brewers team right now, which is both center field and shortstop. At center field, we have the platoon, I guess, of Carlos Gomez and Chris Dickerson. I'm actually gonna run. We are gonna use Carlos Gomez alone, and that's what it's his. That's what he's paid to do. Larry?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I lost your question there for a minute on my phone messed up, but I can tell you what I know about the center field there, and offensively at least. I'm sorry if you just said this. Carlos Gomez isn't an answer offensively, but he is certainly an answer defensively. Mm-hmm. And he definitely provides value to the team on the defensive end, especially when you have an outfield filled with Ryan Braun and Corey Hart on the corners who can't, catch balls to save their life sometimes. It's okay to take that hit offensively to allow someone who can really just cover that ground out there. So it's okay. And another thing is, at least compared to last year, they had Edmonds. They had taken a lot of at-bats and a lot of games in center field last year. Gomez took a good part of it. And who was it? who was the third guy that that we just traded.
We traded Edmonds to the Reds for Chris Dickerson.
Right, right. I'm sorry. In the Greinke trade, the other center fielder we had.
Kane.
Yes, Lorenzo Kane. Absolutely. He definitely provided something at the end. And yeah, it kind of feels bad to go to think what we could have had with Kane this year and go down to Gomez. But A, there's little chance, or there's not a great chance, that Kane was going to be able to replicate what he did last September in a full season in center field here. So you can't worry about that so much. And like I said, just having Gomez defensively, it's a value to the team, even if his bat's kind of a black hole. We had the same black hole last year, and our offense was fine. It's really the defense that we need to improve now. And Gomez helps. Unesky Betancourt, of course, does not. But
what I was saying about Gomez, which I guess you lost, is the fact that I'm kind of optimistic about him defensively. I know that most of the time he can't hit the ball to save his life, but when he does get the ball, and when he does, you know, get on base, you know, Ron Roenick is going to, you know, let him run. That's what, you know, Ken Mocker didn't do last year, and, you know, now that we have we had Escobar last year, but now he's gone to Kansas City, but Gomez is the one, you know, I guess, horse that, you know, can run day in and day out.
Yeah, definitely. He definitely has some weaknesses in his offensive game, but he does have a couple strengths, and speed is definitely one of them, and if Renicky comes in and actually, you know, allows him to use that strength somewhat, then that's a plus for the Brewers. Yeah, last year he had 18 stolen bases and only 3 caught stealing. That's a good percentage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's up, Leanne? Let's talk about shortstop right now. we have another platoon of shortstop. This I think... It is worse than at, you know, center field, because Gomez is such an asset defensively, and Yansky Betancourt is the total opposite, asset defensively. He absolutely, I guess, stinks defensively. He can hit. He had a nice amount of home runs last year, but what do you think about the platoon of Yansky Betancourt and the Ageless Wonder in Craig Counsell?
Yeah, I'm happy with Counsell. I'm happy with the Counsell side of it. Because Counsell, he can play defensively, and he definitely can't play 150 games a year, and he definitely can't get 600 at-bats a year. But if used right, you know, maybe start twice a week and come in the seventh inning of games that the Brewers are winning or something like that, that gets him, you know, makes him a 30-40% player, and he's definitely valuable if his legs are, you know, if his legs aren't tired out there, so I'm okay with that. The Betancourt side, I don't even know what to think. like we said, last year we had in center field we had the offensive hole. And now by putting in Gomez, we still have the offensive hole, but at least he can play defense. Last year at shortstop, we had an offensive hole in Escobar, but at least he could play defense. This year now we have an offensive hole and a defensive hole. So, yeah, I don't know. He's so bad. Betancourt is so bad, and I don't expect anything from him. I know maybe he can get if he replicates his offense from last year, he won't be the worst player in baseball. I hope we agree that. But he's just so bad that I have to think that Doug Melvin or Ron Renicki or someone doesn't really expect him to be a full-time starter all season. Maybe they don't have any options right now because they can't find a free agent. And so maybe they just have to go with it and say he's going to be the starter. But he just seems so bad. I just can't imagine that anybody really wants him to be their starting shortstop. Anybody in the Brewers' front office wants that. We'll see as April comes around, I guess.
Larry?
Yes, I'm sorry.
What did you say?
I just said we'll see what happens if the Brewers really decide to stick with Betancourt once spring training rolls around, and whether or not they are able to sign somebody or not, or if he just kind of keeps being the starter. I hope not. I don't see why they would do that, but we just have to see what happens as February, March unroll and get closer to the season, I guess.
Yeah, because, last time I checked, I think Edgar Renteria and Orlando Cabrera at that time are the best, free agent shortstops out there, and they're, of course, long gone, of course. Renteria's now playing with the rival in the Cincinnati Reds, and that's going to be a tough thing to watch. Every single games during the season is Yastrzemski backcourt defensively. That's just gonna be horrible. It's like watching Major League or something, like the first half of Major League when the team is so bad and they're making all these mistakes that they turn themselves around. But this isn't a movie, this is real life, and I don't think backcourt can turn himself around, just with a snap of a finger.
Yeah, definitely. And with him and standing next to HD on the left side of the infield there, there's going to be a lot of a lot of balls going through the infield that really shouldn't. I really hope that Melvin can do something to find some sort of better shortstop, but I'm not sure when or if that's going to be able to happen.
Yeah, most definitely. And how do you think the Brewers match up with some of the other teams in the Central, like the Cardinals and Reds?
I think they've got as good a chance as anybody. I think rotation wise, I think you got to. I would put them at the top in the rotation of the Central. I know St. Louis has Carpenter and Wainwright, and Wainwright is so good and so underrated that they are really good in that regard. Carpenter is so good too, but he's getting a little old, so it's hard to say whether or not he's going to be as healthy this year as he has been in years past. But if they're both healthy, then yeah, they have just as good of rotations as anybody else. And of course, they have Pujols and Holiday and everybody else. And so they're definitely a team to contend with. The same with the Reds. The Reds won the division last year, and they deserved it. Joey Votto deserved that MVP award, and they have good pitchers. They're all with Chapman and all of that, and they're all good teams. But I think the Brewers are an equally good team, and I think all three of these teams could win anywhere between 88 and 92 games, depending on how the breaks go. And so you just gotta play out the season and see what breaks fall for who. I think all three of those teams are have a good chance at winning the division. I think that's really all you can ask, especially after making the trades with Greinke and Fielder and all that.
You mean Greinke and Markham, not Greinke Fielder?
Well, no. I meant Greinke and Markham, and with Fielder staying for this year.
Okay. Yeah. And Fielder is in his contract year, and I think he's just going to go all out. I think he's going to have a career year this year. He probably won't have the kind of a year when he, hit 50 home runs, but I think he's going to be around there 45, 135, RBIs that kind of season.
Yeah, it's going to be a great season. And at least the pictures that I've seen, and they aren't the best pictures, but the pictures I've seen look like he's lost a lot of weight and gotten himself a lot healthier too. And so if he really has gotten himself into a better playing shape, a stronger body, then, just look out.
Yeah, most definitely. And the kind of thing that kind of disappoints me about Prince Fielder is the fact that, every single team has, the start of the year, winter kind of event where they have all players, all managers, all coaches, older players, whatever, sign autographs, take pictures with, all the fans.
Mm-hmm.
And the Brewers had that with, of course, Brewers on deck, and we learned that Prince Fielder is not going to be there. No reason why yet, but he's just not going to be there. That's kind of concerning, but, I don't know. It's just January, it's probably off in California or something like that, chilling. But, I actually have to apologize. I thought that Orlando Cabrera re-signed or signed with another team, but he is still a free agent. And we were talking about shortstops: Cabrera, Crosby, Christian Guzman, Jerry Harrison Jr., Julio Lugo, Aguirre Ojeda, and Nick Punto are still, you know, free agents for shortstops. So, you know, that's not really that great of a list, but, you know, the Brewers, you know, can give one of those guys a...
Punto would be a great option, because defensively, Punto is fantastic. He's a terrible offensive player, but he is a wizard with a glove. So if they could sign Punto, that would solve the problem that we have with Betancourt. I just think he's probably going to get like $5 million, and I don't know if the Brewers feel like they can afford to pay someone like that $5 million, especially after they'd be, you know, eating the cost of Betancourt if they replaced him.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, I'd rather have a wizard on a defense and a horrible offense player than Betancourt, who can't do either. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, and let's move on to an NL Central trade that happened last week, of course, where Matt Garza, of course, formerly of the Tampa Bay Rays, went to the Chicago Cubs, and the Cubs traded basically a crap ton of prospects. They traded Chris Archer, Hawk, Julie, Brian Geyer, and Robinson Chirinos. And what I read is that, you know, Chris Archer was a top, you know, prospect in the Cubs the Cubs farm system last year. And I'm a Brewer fan, so I'm gonna have bias against the Cubs, but I just really, really don't like this trade for the Cubs. You know, Matt Garza, of course, he is, you know, a good player, but the Cubs give up, you know, all these prospects, which, you know, could, you know, hurt them in the future. I know Matt Garza is only 27, so a young guy, but, you know, other than Garza, you know, Zambrano's getting up there, you know, Dempster's getting up there. You know, I just don't like this trade really for the Cubs, even though that Garza's a really good pitcher.
Yeah, Garza is a good pitcher. Some people don't think he's quite as good as his numbers, but I think he's a fine pitcher. I think he'll do fine in Chicago. I think he's a better pitcher now before we're getting to Chicago than Ted Lilly was when Ted Lilly got to the Cubs, and Ted Lilly did fine and actually did a lot better than I ever would have thought. So Garza could do that and have at least Ted Lilly's career. And you know, the Cubs, I think, have got to be happy with what they got out to Lilly. But the problem with the trade that I don't get is, yeah, you're right, they traded a whole bunch of prospects. Some people say they traded better prospects than the Brewers did for Zach Greinke. And they got a pretty good pitcher, they didn't get a great pitcher. They didn't get Zach Greinke back. And sure, Garza helps the team, but he helps the team, what go from 75 wins to 80 wins? You know, it's not like we're talking about a 90-win team that Matt Garza is going to turn them into a playoff team. We're talking about, in their most optimistic projections, they might be able to compete for second place or whatever in the division with Matt Garza. If everything was absolutely right, and we know these last couple years things are not going right for the Cubs, so I wouldn't expect that at all.
You know, actually,
I would expect them at best to be third place, even with Matt Garza. And that just does not seem like the type of trade you make to, you know, end up in third place.
You know, most definitely. And of course, I guess their ace is still, you know, Carlos Zambrano, and, you know, he's just... Zambrano's the kind of pitcher where you just don't know what to expect of that guy, you know, game in and game out, and, you know, I wouldn't trust, you know, Zambrano as an ace. I don't think that Garza's really kind of an ace in, in a playoff contending rotation, so... I don't know what really to expect for the Cubs.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they have a decent team on paper, but they had a decent team on paper last year and the year before, and didn't get them anywhere, and the players are just getting older and not getting better. And yeah, I wouldn't expect much from the Cubs this year, but you know, don't want to say too much. You don't want to get stuck in eating your words from a Cubs fan. Those are they're the worst to to do that with.
But you know, if things look up for Cubs, they're always gonna go down. That's what has been going on for the Cubs for over 100 years.
Yeah, true. Very true.
And let's actually do some general baseball talk here. Of course, you were talking about Pujols earlier with the St. Louis Cardinals, and like Fielder, you know Pujols is in his contract year, but you know I personally think that there's gonna be, you know, a 7-year deal that's gonna, you know, be signed, you know, probably by, you know, opening day. But if that doesn't happen and Pujols, you know, does not get extended till the 2011-2012 off season, could this be a top 5, you know, year in baseball history if Pujols is in his contract year?
That's a good question. I would say the only reason I would say no is just because Pujols doesn't strike me as the type of guy who would, you know, necessarily put up a monster year in his contract year just because it's a contract year. I think for the most part, the absolute utter brilliance that you see from him every year, or that you've seen from him for the past 10 years of his career, I think that's probably what you're going to get on any given year, if it's a contract year or what. So I think maybe you could get a top 5 year out of Albert Pujols, but that's just because Albert Pujols is so good that he could give you a top 5 year any year. I don't know. I don't think it'd necessarily be affected by the contract, but the guy is so good, and he's only 30 years old that, you just don't know what to expect. He could come out and just give you like a year that you haven't seen since 1935 or something, and it wouldn't shock me at all. That's how good he is. So it's possible, but that's just because he's so good that it's possible, I think.
So the crazy thing is, if opening day of 2011, some horrible injury happens where, you know, Pujols has retired. The crazy thing is, he's only 30, but if he retires, you know, opening day because of injury, he's a Hall of Famer. At 30, a Hall of Famer.
If his leg falls off during the national anthem on opening day, and he can never play baseball again because he's only one-legged, he would absolutely be a Hall of Famer in 5 years, and he would still be one of the top 5 for 6 first baseman ever, even with just the 10 years that he has. If he doesn't do anything else the rest of his career, he would still be one of the top 5-6 first baseman ever. And that's just how good he is, and he's just going to get better, because I don't foresee his leg falling off on opening day. I think we'll get to see a few more years out of the Albert Pujols at least.
But if that happens, you know, I think we should have, you know, 5, 6, 7, you know, all-star years for Pujols. He's just that amazing, you know?
Yeah, he's really good. Really understatement to say he's really good.
You don't have to be a, you know, baseball writer to say that Albert Pujols is really good.
Yeah, he's pretty good. He's worth
paying. You know, definitely. And let's move on to the American League. And I guess one of the losers, of the offseason have been the New York Yankees. Their rotation, what exactly happened to the Yankees this offseason? Of course, they do have that great offense, but their rotation has fallen, basically crumbled. You know, they didn't get Cliff Lee, they didn't get Greinke because of, I guess, personal reasons. Cliff Lee, of course, I guess his wife got kind of harassed by, you know, Yankee fans, and, you know, Greinke anxiety problems, and New York is probably, you know, not the best place to go to if you have problems, you know, emotionally. Do you really see that the Yankees are gonna, you know, fall, you know, not just the second, but maybe the third in the AL East?
I don't think, you know, the Yankees didn't get the players that they wanted to get. But, you know, again, we're talking about a team that won 95 or something games last year, and they were just, you know, looking to improve from their 95 game win season. So, yeah, maybe they didn't get their targets. They didn't get necessarily better, but they're not really getting any worse. They're still a 90-something win team. The Red Sox got better, and the Rays kind of stayed the same. Maybe they went down a little bit. So anything can happen with those three teams. They're all really good. I still think the Yankees have 90-something wins in them just because of how good they are, even without Cliff Lee, even without Zach Greinke or Adrian Beltre or Adrian Gonzalez or any of the other people that they supposedly could have wanted this offseason. So, you know, it kind of depends on how the chips fall throughout the season, but they're a 90-something win team. The Red Sox could be a 90-something win team. The Rays could be a 90-something win team. So I suppose it's possible that they could get to third place, but I would expect them to be fighting with the Red Sox probably for first place all season, somewhere in the 95-96 win range. And I think the Yankees fans need to chill out, because I think their team's going to be fine next year.
You know, I know a lot of people from New York, a lot of Yankee fans, and they're kind of freaking out. You know, I guess that's, you know, New York. If your team does not look good on paper, you have to freak out because you expect to win. You are the Yankees, and you expect to win. And, you know, I guess the Yankee fans are probably starting not to expect a winning season. But in my opinion, I just ask you that question about the Yankees because of the fact that, you know, Yankee fans are freaking out, but I still think that they have a nice team there in New York.
Yeah, certainly. I absolutely agree. They're going to be fine.
In your opinion, what do you think is a surprise team to look out for next year? Other, of course, than the Brewers.
That's a good question. Who would it be? I think the NL has gotten itself NL's in pretty good shape. I would think if it's going to be anybody that would be considered a surprise, it's probably going to be the A's. Because the AL East knows where it's at. The AL Central knows where it's at with the Twins and the White Sox. The AL West, they have the Rangers, but the A's are quietly really good. They have a lot of really good young players that just, you know, you don't hear about, so you kind of forget that they're there. But they can put something together with all the talent that they have on their team. So if anybody's a surprise, I would think it'd be the A's.
What do you think about teams like Baltimore?
I think Baltimore would be nice if they weren't in the AL East, stuck behind the three best teams in the American League. You know, they have a long way to go to be able to fight those, be able to even reach the Rays level. You know, and not to say that they're a bad team, but they are not in a good situation with the Yankees, Red Sox, and Rays all on top of them, and you know also the Blue Jays. So they're in a bad situation.
But they're definitely a better team than they were last year. You know, they have some young pitching with, you know, Brian Mathis. And they really did improve their, you know, infield with getting, you know, Mark Reynolds, of course, former Brewer J.J. Hardy. And Derek Lee, of course, you have, you know, former All-Star Brian Roberts, you know, at second base. So, you know.
Yeah. They have some pieces. Fans in Baltimore have to be feeling pretty good about what they see. Compared to, you know, 3-4 years ago when they were just hopeless, but yeah, they still that division is just ridiculous.
Yeah, most definitely. I guess we're kind of running out of time. We kind of have a time limit, you know, for the show, but like a little over an hour, and we kind of been talking for about, you know, half an hour. So of course, you have to plug Hardball Times. Why do you think people should check out Hardball Times?
Well, Hardball Times is, you know, it's a great great organization, great site, and it's filled with a bunch of, I wouldn't even be able to tell you exactly how many writers. There's just so many good writers who write interesting stuff about baseball and stats and baseball history and all that, and see three or four new pieces a day at least, and then they have fantasy coverage and they have some statistics, and it's a solid site with good writing, and that really should be checked out. And also, you can check out my blog too. I write at weavenball.com, weavenball.com, where I write about different things too. And you may have heard from last year, the Tater Trot Tracker, where I timed the home run, how long it took every player to round the bases after they hit a home run, and every single home run of the year to track that, and I'll be doing that again this year.
Do you remember how long it took Prince Fielder?
Prince Fielder was somewhere around 23 and a half seconds. The average is 22. Average is 22, with 20 to 24 being the bulk of it. So he was kind of on the high average side, but not nearly as slow as you might think. There's much slower guys than Prince Fielder.
Most
notably, David Ortiz in Boston, and Billy Butler in Kansas City. Those guys are slow.
And who's the quickest?
Guy in Oakland named Adam Rosales.
Yeah.
Basically, he runs out every single home run as if it was an inside the park home run. And so he's about 2 seconds faster than anybody else, and he runs it at like 15 seconds, which is
what
most people run an inside the park or home run out at. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Thank you, Larry, for coming on the show. And everybody will be right back for more of the Brewers Viewer Podcast.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
And the pitch is hit in the air to left and deep. Hey, get up! Get out of here! Go!
It's been a long time, but the Brewers are back.
We got the crew from Milwaukee, and we're on the attack.
Cause in the NL, we moving up the rankings.
With a big old bat of Mench and Jenkins.
We got the shooter.
Throwing the heater.
But Billy Hall
hits the deep ball.
Cutting short that tailgate party.
And we can't miss a swing by J.J. Hardy.
Weeks takes a pitch for a ride.
There goes Bernie down the slide.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Brewers Fever Podcast. And right now, we're going to talk about some news that have been going around Brewers Nation since the last episode of the show. And the first story is really not Brewers related, but I guess it is because it deals with our most hated, I guess, rival in the NL Central. And of course, that is the Chicago Cubs, and like I mentioned in the intro, and of course in the Larry Granillo trade, the Cubs did acquire, you know, Matt Garza from the Tampa Bay Rays. They got Garza, Fernando Perez, and Zach Roscoe for Sam Fold, Chris Archer, Brandon Guyer, Robinson Chirinos, and Hachu Lee. I really don't know much about the prospects other than Archer is supposed to be like the top pitching prospect, you know, for the Cubs. Now I guess he's the top pitching prospect for the Rays, and Brandon Guyer is supposed to be really good. But other than that, I really don't know much about the, you know, the guys that, you know, came to the Tampa Bay Rays. But it's, you know, Matt Garza is a really nice pitcher, but that's not gonna take the Cubs to, you know, the Brewers, Cardinals, and Reds level? I don't think so. What do you think, Abe?
Well, first of all, I don't think the Cubs are my most hated rival of the Brewers. I think the Cardinals are. Just because that whole Untuckum thing just drives me nuts. So, I guess a little bit of clarification there. At least on my end, but I really thought the Cubs gave up a lot. From all indications, they gave up more for Garza than we did for Greinke.
Yeah,
and I think
I think they gave up more for Garza than we did for Markham and Greinke. I think.
Yeah, And I think that a good comparison would be this would be, I think the Cubs are where the Brewers would be, with a little worse offense, and basically just having done the Markham trade. Kind of, you know, decent pitching now, and you know, obviously I think that that hypothetical Brewer team would have had better offense, so they would have probably won a couple more games. But that's kind of where the Cubs are now, and I think, like you said, they're a pretty solid fourth in the division, but I'm really skeptical of both the Reds and the Cardinals. I think the Reds are due for a lot of regression candidates. Emily Bronson Arroyo. I think Joey Votto. I think he's for real, but I don't think he's that for real. He didn't have a single pop-up out last year, which I find pretty ridiculous. So, you know, I do think that Jay Bruce will have a really good year. Probably have one of his best seasons of his career next year, so that might have to counteract that a little bit. But it seems like the Reds kind of got a lot of kind of overachieving seasons. Scott Rowland's another one that comes to mind. So didn't they lead the National League in runs last year?
Right.
I think that offense will go from number one to, you know, maybe, you know, 3, 4, 5, somewhere in that range, which is still very good, and I think they'll be a very good team, but I don't think that they will be as good as last year. I don't think they'll win the division. But in terms of the Cubs, Matt Garza, I know the Brewers were rumored to be at least interested in him for a while. And, you know, obviously Friedman down in Tampa Bay is, you know, kind of drives a hard bargain. And that's what it took Hendry to give up, was, you know, a lot of good players for Garza. But Garza did not really have good peripherals last year. He's got increasing walks, decreasing strikeouts, which is always a bad sign. He's also an extreme flyball pitcher, which in Tampa Bay doesn't make that big of a difference, but you put him in Wrigley, and I think, you know, maybe he will get the, you know, half a run ERA bump from switching leagues and divisions, but I also think that, you know, maybe that's worth 0.6. You know, 0.5 with the league, and you know, maybe 0.1 or 2 with the divisions. But you know, if Garza is going to, you know, the ballpark factor might counteract the division factor, going from pitching, you know, say roughly half your games in Tropicana Field to, you know, going into Wrigley. So,
if you want me to interrupt you at times, you're talking about the difference between, you know, Wrigley and Tropicana Field. And as we, you know, both know from watching the Brewers against the Cubs or Cubs against another team, you know, during summer, during spring, whatever, there are games where the wind at Wrigley is just absolutely nuts.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, like you said, we've seen it plenty of times where it's just like, how did that ball go out? It's kind of like a routine pop-up.
Mm-hmm.
And it just somehow lands on Sheffield Avenue. So, you know, that's going to be happening. There's also, I think Daniel Centro gets a little bit of a bad rap. You know, obviously you have all those games against the Pirates and the Astros, but the Brewers and the Reds are, you know, two of the top three offenses in the National League too. So I think that might be overestimated a little bit, but it's kind of a classic Jim Hendry move, kind of overpay for somebody who is going to make a little bit of a difference. And, I think it's just a great move for Tampa Bay. I mean, they basically just slide Hellickson right in there, you know, in that low rotation. So all of you guys that play fantasy, keep an eye on him, because he'll probably produce good value. And I'm not unimpressed. I think it's a move the Cubs had to make, because I think even Cubs fans are getting a little tired of having a pretty weak team the last couple of years. But and they've had a good offseason, I would say. Hopefully Aramis Ramirez for them comes back and has a little bit of a bounce back year. He kind of came back on the last half of the year. He had a horrendous first half. I think Carlos Pena, for the same reasons we mentioned with Garza, maybe regressing a little bit. I think Carlos Pena will probably have a pretty good season in Wrigley, you know, and being in another contract year for him. I also think that this is not going to show up in the statistics at all, but something I do believe in a little bit is kind of familiarity. So I think Garza and Carlos Pena will help each other out a little bit, just kind of having that familiarity with each other, you know, kind of being for the first, you know, week or two of the season, being able to go out to dinner together and not be all alone in the big shy town.
You know, definitely. And The crazy thing is about the Rays is that, you know, they gave up a, you know, nice pitcher and, of course, you know, and Matt Garza, but they also got the Cubs' number one pitching prospect in Chris Archer. You know, the Rays, you know, of course, lost Pena, Garza, and Crawford, but yet they still can compete for that AL East title, which is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the exact numbers, but kind of a lot of some of the more high-profile bloggers in the baseball blogosphere are kind of calling this year's draft the year of the Rays, because just all those draft picks that they've accumulated for all those players that they've lost, you know, for Pena and for Crawford, you know, a lot of those guys were type A guys, Soriano. So they've got a ton of draft picks, which, and it's just a continuous cycle, especially exasperated by their small market demands, you know, so they're going to have to keep coming. And like you said, they bring up Helixson for Garza. You know, that's next year. As soon as next year, it's probably not going to be a big difference, except in payroll.
Yeah.
You know, Garza probably going to make, you know, $5 or $6 million. I think he filed for $6 million, didn't he?
Yeah.
I could be wrong on that. Anyway, somewhere in that ballpark. And Helixson next year is going to be making $400K. You know, a little bit of a worse example because Carl Crawford's probably going to be much better than Desmond Jennings. But Desmond Jennings, you know, per dollar is going to be probably better than Carl Crawford at $10 million or whatever he made last year. And he's going to be Desmond Jennings making $400K. So it's just, you know, just a complete perpetual cycle. And they're probably one of the best in the league at that. And it's even harder because they don't draw any fans. They don't get any help from their fans. I mean, you look at Milwaukee and we're having, you know, a relatively sustainable $90 million payroll, and we can actually afford that.
Yeah. And I have to interrupt you again about the fans. You know, it's mid-late, you know, January, but the Brewers have already sold 1 million tickets.
Yeah, and that just goes to show you that Milwaukee is a great baseball town. And, you know, you can say this is a Packers state, and I wouldn't disagree with you, but I think, like, in strictly a Milwaukee sense, and sad to say for those of you that are also BucksCast listeners, but it's really just a baseball town, and it's been like that ever since the Braves were here. And, you know, will they embrace the Bucks when they're good? Yeah, but, you know, with the situation the Bucks are in now, the Brewers are getting that extra kind of entertainment dollar right now, and it's good for the Brewers because I think baseball, it's more important that you have a fan base like that than it is in the NBA, where the revenue sharing is a little bit different, and so the attendance is not one of the major components.
Yeah, and you know the money that you can actually spend on players depends on you know, how many fans comes to the game, unlike in the NBA where they have a set salary cap.
Yeah, exactly.
So enough about that. Let's move on. Of course, the Brewers have sold 1 million tickets since the trading for both Greinke and Markham. That's absolutely awesome. That's absolutely awesome. You know that the you know city of Milwaukee and Brewer fans are getting pumped up about this team so you know early. You know we're still midway through, you know winter, still blistering cold out, but you know Wisconsinites are really getting excited about the Brewers, and they have shown that with you know buying 1 million tickets so far.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that was certainly one of the reasons Greinke decided to come here was, you know, the fact that we were contending. And, you know, the Brewers, even though, you know, the last 2 years have been pretty solidly mediocre, the fans have still come out. And like I alluded to earlier, that's just so important for a baseball team to have that sustainable, you know, amount of people coming in. And, you know, it's really good that those advanced sales are being used for this year because I think kind of history has shown that you get the playoff bump after the season after. You don't get it the season during. So it's very important that, you know, not coming off a playoff season, we're getting that bump just because of the moves that we've made in free agency. And hopefully, you know,
Greinke's better for it, and everybody's, you know, more pumped up for it, and it gives the Brewers a real home field advantage that they just didn't have last year and the year before. You know, the couple years before that, the Brewers were so good at home, and they were really poor on the road. And that was kind of their flaw was, okay, well, you have one of the best home records in the National League, but you're counteracting that with one of the worst road records. And that just was gone the last 2 years. And I don't blame the fans. I think, you know, more than likely it's just an anomaly. But, you know, hopefully that home field advantage, which in baseball really doesn't matter that much. But I think that, you know, looking back throughout this decade, it's shown to have at least a little bit of an effect in Milwaukee.
Yeah, well, definitely. Now let's move on to some other news for Brewers. And the first thing that we should talk about is Prince Fielder, now the richest Brewer in team history, avoiding arbitration and getting a $15.5 million contract. You know, just for this season. You know, everybody was saying, he got too much money. I'm like, no, not really. You know. We want to keep Prince Fielder with this team, you know, for this year because of the fact that we do have the rotation, the lineup, whatever, to make a run at, you know, not only the NL Central Championship, home field advantage, but maybe even a World Series appearance. And Fielder is going to be really key for that. So, you know, that's a... That's a lot of money, 15.5, but, you know, in the 2012 offseason, he's probably going to get more. He's probably going to get more, so we're just paying him just to keep him around just for this year, and that's all I'm thinking. We're just, you know, we're just going to have him around just for this year, not trade him, you know, go to the playoffs, make a run at the World Series, and get the you know, compensation picks. In the 2012 offseason. So, Abe, what do you think about this?
Well, I don't know if it'll be because of this, but I think that Prince Fielder is going to have an incredible year next year. For whatever reason, he seems to have a very good year, followed up by a slightly disappointing year every other year. So, I think it was Darren Erstad that was kind of like that in the late 90s, early 2000s. Every other year was really good and really poor, kind of flip-flopped, and no one in their right mind could explain it. And I think Fielder might be that way. Maybe it's because of his conditioning or whatever. Or, you know, other times it's maybe been his contract that he's a little miffed at. So I don't know. I did see some of the pictures from his Japanese trip where he did look a little slimmer. Didn't look like Johnny Estrada anymore. He did three or four seasons ago. So hopefully, you know, he's in the best shape of his career, and it'll really only benefit the Brewers, you know. Is Prince Fielder gone after this year? Pretty much, yeah. And I really, to be honest, I think it's in the best interest of the Brewers if he is gone. Because just the amount of money and years that we're going to have to pump into Prince Fielder, it's not a good stock to buy with the body, with his body and his corner position. Just, it's not a good investment for a small market team. But, you know, I think that he's shown that when he has that contract security, he has a better season. He had a better season 2 years ago. He had probably the best season of his career, you know, when he signed that 2-year deal through arbitration. So I think that matters to him. And I mean, Scott Boras probably calls him up every night and just tells him what he needs to do to get a better contract. You know, he's just that good of an agent. So, you know, Prince Fielder, I hope you are worth every penny of your $15.5 million. And if you kind of follow the rough kind of estimate of arbitration, you know, the first year of arbitration you get 40%, then the next year you get 60%, and then in your third year you get 80% of what you're worth. You know, so just a quick little math there. That means he's worth $20 million on the open market, which I think is pretty much right in line with the rumored Adrian Gonzalez contract. You know, I think he was rumored to get, you know, $8,160. By the Red Sox. So I think that's pretty much fair market value for him. I don't think we got a good deal. I don't think we got a poor deal, which will probably help if, you know, worst comes to worst and we really fall out of the playoff picture and we can sell him in July and hopefully we won't have to eat a lot of money because the other team will only have to pay for, you know, say, $10 million of that, which is, you know, very cheap for someone of Prince Fielder's caliber.
I am a sapling. And some other arbitration deals, of course. Manny Parra and the Birds agreed to a $1.2 million contract for this year. Like we said in the first episode of the Birds Fear podcast, you know, just wait to see how he does in spring training and just go from there. You know, I'm not really expecting a lot from Manny Parra after what he did last year, but if he can be worth $1.2 million, I think that's enough to be like a long relief or something. If he is a fifth starter and replaces Narvison and kind of goes back to what he was a few years ago, you know what? That's all good, but I don't really have much faith in Manny Parra.
Well, for anybody who was screaming that Manny Parra got a raise, I saw a little bit of that kind of in the Brewers blogosphere. Just a lack of understanding of the arbitration process. It just happens. I remember the year Ginger Hardy played like 30 games, he got a raise in arbitration. It's just how the system is made to work. You know, like I said earlier, it's at roughly 40, 60, 80 kind of threshold. And Manny Parra fits in there. I'm kind of expecting a good year out of Manny Parra. I think he will settle into that sixth long man role, and I hope that he's used a little more out of the bullpen than Maka used him. And Maka lost confidence in him, and kind of rightfully so, because Manny Parra was awful, and he got a lot of chances the last 2 years, especially with how awful the Brewers' pitching was. Manny Parra, you know, you can look at some of his sabermetric numbers. His BABIP is extremely high, but his BABIP has been extremely high pretty much his whole career. And if you look, you know, more in depth at his ERA by times through the order, his ERA the first time through the order is pretty solid. You know, it's good. He's got good stuff. His secondary stuff is very good. His fastball is awful. Mm-hmm. And then as it goes on, you know, does he tire? Maybe people pick up on his stuff. Whatever reason, you just get bombed. It's kind of like Carlos Villanueva syndrome. It's kind of like, you know, as a starter, he's good for four innings, but then that third time through the order, he's just giving up bombs. But, you know, there's some value in that, you know, and maybe he's not a starter. Maybe he's just a reliever. He wouldn't be the first guy. I think he had a 708 OPS against his first time through the order, which is good. I mean, it's not a lockdown reliever, but, you know, that's a valuable guy out of the bullpen. And being left-handed and throwing 96 miles an hour, in addition to, and I think the Brewers have a little bit of, you know, Jorge De La Rosa syndrome, and they don't want to lose Parra, and they don't want to see him become a very serviceable starter for somebody else. So I think he's going to continue to get chances, and I think he'll make, you know, the most of his at least relief chances. I think he'll be pretty good in the bullpen.
Yeah. And there's one arbitration deal that's, you know, still going on between the Brewers and Weeks, and they're about $2.5 million in between each other apart during the argument. So we'll probably have a decision by episode number 3 of the Brewers Super Podcast. But I hope that the Brewers not only avoid arbitration with Weeks, but, you know, give him a multi-year deal, because after what I seen last year, after, you know, being hurt in the 2009, I think he really does deserve it. I really think he does deserve a multi-year deal, and I do want, you know, him around for next, you know, for next 3, 4, 5 years.
I absolutely agree. I think Doug Melvin is a decent GM. He's an above average GM. He's kind of a B-minus GM. If he was really shrewd, he would have tried to extend Weeks after last year, when he was, you know, he played a month, had an incredible month, but still missed 5 months, and, you know, was certainly at least a little bit of uncertainty surrounding just exactly what he was going to become. And then, you know, you look at after his last year, and he was incredible. I think he was the best second baseman in the National League last year. You know, and that was because Chase Utley got hurt and a lot of other things, but the fact of the matter was, he was the best second baseman in baseball last year, and his agent is going to be zeroing in on that. And, you know, Dan Uggla, and you always got to compare yourself to the next best thing. And Dan Uggla, you know, he signed a big extension with the Braves. And from all indications I've seen, Ricky Weeks and his agent are comparing Ricky Weeks to Dan Uggla. And Ricky Weeks is no Dan Uggla. And I think Gord Ash and Doug Melvin realize that, and I think they're right in that. And that's posturing. There were rumors that Weeks was close to an extension last year before his agent got hired with the Phoenix Suns, and then so we got a new agent. And maybe this agent is less upfront money in terms of his own money, and he's trying to get Weeks a better deal, trying to be more shrewd. And I hope Weeks stays. I think we have a window for the next 2 years with Greinke being here 2 years. So even though we'll lose Fielder, maybe we can reinvest that $15.5 million somewhere else in the team. And maybe some of that money will go to Weeks, and maybe we'll overpay Weeks a little bit more than we should. And I don't think Weeks will be as good as he was last year. But I think Weeks will still be a very good player. So I think that's worth it. And he's kind of has the body type in addition to the talent. And he's at a good age where he can have a good 4 or 5 years, and that's a worthwhile investment. So I hope it gets done in the off season, and I also hope if it doesn't get done, that maybe it, you know, doesn't just completely destroy the relationship between Weeks, his agent, and the Brewers. And so maybe it can be done in the middle of the season or something like that, so that we don't have to replace both Fielder and Weeks. Because I think if we lose both Fielder and Weeks in 2012, I don't know that we can really realistically contend.
Yeah, most definitely. And before we wrap up the news segments of the show, Jason Stark from, of course, ESPN.com, you know, posted a nice, you know, article, you know, yesterday on Tuesday, January the 18th, about, you know, some interesting, you know, contract details from this offseason. And he actually, you know, brought up, you know, Takashi Saito's contract. And apparently he gets a $10,000 to $25,000 bonus if he's chosen to start in the All-Star game. But he's a relief pitcher. He's a relief pitcher. 292 appearances, no starts. That's I think maybe Melvin or, you know, Saito's agent were having some fun with that, but I don't know. It's kind of crazy to me. Some other guys have that, you know, same like bonus type thing in their contract are Will Omen from the White Sox and Jesse Crane, of course, from the White Sox. So that kind of made me laugh a little bit. And another thing about Takashi Saito's contract, which I learned from Adam McAuliffe? Of course, he's the beat writer for the Milwaukee Brewers. And there's something in Takashi Saito's contract, you know, after the 2011 season, we must release him. We must release him, and we won't get a draft pick from him. So that's kind of like what happened between, you know, him and the Braves in the 2010 season, of course, after the 2010 season.
It's just one of those things, I think. I mean, he's 38 years old. No, he's 40, isn't he?
He's 40. Sorry. He's a man! He's 40!
How could I forget? You know, the free agent compensation system is just awful, to be honest. And you see these relievers, I think Todd Coffey was a type A free agent relief pitcher, which should tell you all you need to know about the absurdity of the system. And I think that's, especially in relievers contracts, that's really becoming common because teams don't want to fork over A draft picks for relievers who just, when the long and the short of it is they're not that valuable. You know, even over one season. So I guess I'm not that surprised. I'm sure he had the same thing in the Braves contract.
Mm-hmm.
One of those other interesting incentive things was Manny Parra gets a $50,000 bonus for being in the All-Star game. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. I'm sure that's, like you mentioned earlier, I think that was just to kind of give the agents a chance to artificially inflate the contract and kind of leak it out and say, oh, well, Saito signed a 1-year, $3 million contract. And whenever you look at it and it's like, eh, you probably overpaid by a couple hundred thousand there. But then you look at the contract for real and it's, you know, really only worth $1.7 million of guaranteed and the rest is tied up in incentives. It's kind of like that Donovan McNabb contract. It's like, oh, a 6-year, $78 million contract. Well, really only 3.5 of it's guaranteed. So, you know, in baseball and really in football, you have to focus more on the guaranteed aspect of it because that's the most important thing because so much of this stuff is just like, oh, who's going to be the first one to leak it to the media and get that shock value? Whereas, you know, the reality of the situation can be completely different. And just because of the nature of baseball, you don't find that as much in baseball, but it's certainly prevalent. Definitely happens.
Yeah, most definitely. And I'm really saying yeah, most definitely, you know, a lot in this episode. But I'm looking at this Jason Sark, you know, article, and here's some interesting, you know, clauses, little tidbits from the contracts that have happened in this offseason that I want to talk about. You know, Josh Hamilton has a, you know, some players have a silver slugger incentive, you know, in their contract, you know?
Yeah.
Thank you, Kat.
Juan does.
Yeah, Jimmy Juan, yeah. Why? He's 0-14 in his entire career, but yet he still gets a, you know, silver slugger cause if he actually wins the silver slugger you know award at the you know end of the season.
Cinderberry named the Giovanni Gallardo Award.
Yeah. Yes. Six Pirates. Have a World Series MVP clause in a contract, which is kind of interesting. Adam Dunn has a $25,000 Gold Glove incentive, you know, from the White Sox, but too bad it's a DH.
And if he ever won the Gold Glove, I think they would have to discontinue the award.
Yeah. So that's kind of interesting. That's kind of funny. You know, J.C. Romero from the Phillies, a reliever, has the same incentive thing as Jamie Juan, but he's a relief pitcher. So those are some things that I found kind of interesting and funny in that, you know, Jason Stark article. But I guess that's basically wraps up the show. Do you have anything to add?
Well, go Packers this Sunday.
Yes.
Hopefully it's, you know, we get another 2 weeks of, 2 weeks of football season because that basketball team of ours isn't doing so good.
Yeah.
But what was the number that you said? 45 days till the pitchers and catchers report?
Yeah, I think, you know, 45 or 44 days, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, somewhere in that ballpark, but, you know. Exciting
nice,
news.
Nice pun.
You liked it?
Yes. Did he on purpose?
Probably a little bit, subconsciously, but not 100%. But, yeah, go Packers, beat up the Bears, go to the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl, but don't get too far ahead of yourselves. And, look forward to seeing some jostling in the media among contracts, and hopefully we don't have to go to any arbitration cases with any Brewers, but if we do, we win, and maybe we can extend Ricky Weeks by the time the next Brewers Fever show comes on.
Which is next week, and I guess we can announce some guests for next week's episode, and the first guest that's going to come on here is former big leaguer, now he works at such places as, you know, ESPN.com and Baseball Tonight. That guy is Doug Glanville, of course. And another, I think this is the most interesting interview that I've ever had, you know, both in Brewers Fever and in the Bucks cast. This guy, he's 7'2", 270 pounds. But no, he is not a center, you know, in the NBA or college basketball. His name is Frank Schepanek. He is a starting pitcher for Barry University, and he's 7'2", 270 pounds. That is just nuts. He's 4 inches taller than his idol, Randy Johnson, and 3 inches taller than the current tallest player in big league history, of course. That guy is John Rausch. And if this guy makes it to the majors at 7'2", he's automatically my favorite player. I don't care if he plays for the Cubs or Cardinals. He's automatically my most favorite player because it's crazy. He is 7'2", 270 pounds, but yeah, he's a pitcher. He's not a basketball player. He's a pitcher. Oh, yeah, he's white. I just
probably better than John Brockman, too.
Yes, he is. Yeah, well, he is about, I guess, you know, 5 or 6 inches taller than Brockman.
There you go.
So, yeah, Frank Schepanek is going to be on the show with Doug Glanville. So, everybody, we're going to have a big episode, number 3, the Brewers Fever Podcast next week. And, guys, there will be more and more guests in the future of the Brewers Fever Podcast. I'm not going to tell you right now. You're going to have to stay tuned till next week. Or you can follow me on Twitter, Dakota_Schmidt, on Twitter, email the show, BrewersFever@gmail.com. Of course, Abe, plug away.
Twitter, GBMB34. Done.
All right, guys. See you next week. Of course, go Brewers go. Go Pack go. And I guess, go Bucks go. They'll make a run one of these days. One of these days, the Bucks will make a run. I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting, but we'll talk about that on the Bucks cast, everybody. So, next time, listen to the Bucks cast. If you're a Bucks fan, if you're not, just wait till the next burst of your podcast, everybody. Dakota Schmidt, Abraham Jaszewski, and we're signing out.